So a couple of weeks ago, I introduced a new series, I Love My Church. Someone spoke to me afterwards and said, surely the series should be called I Love the Church, not I Love My Church. Rather, and someone else also commented, perhaps we should also call it I Love His Church, rather than I Love My Church. Because the church is God's and not mine. But as I explained to that person, I think sometimes it's very easy for us as Christians to think outside, out there, and for it not to become quite so personal. And actually, when we start to think about church, we need to understand that we are part of this community. This is the church that we are placed in, where God has called us to be, and we belong to this church. And we need to understand what that means for us. What does it look like for us to love the church where God has placed us, where we are? I recognize that there are some of you here this morning, and I know some of your stories. You're on a bit of a journey, and you're transitioning. And maybe God is leading you to find a new home with us here or somewhere else. I don't know. What's important is that we don't go rogue. We don't go solo. Because actually, as Christians, we need to be, and we're meant to be, and God wants us to be. It's God's plan for us to be rooted into a local body of his people. I can guarantee you that this church is not perfect. The reason I know that is because I'm the minister, and I'm not perfect. So if I'm not perfect, it can't be perfect. Although you're all perfect, it's not perfect because I'm here, okay? But God has placed us where he has placed us. God has put us there, and we need to understand that and recognize that. We need to grapple with the fact that it's not perfect, that sometimes things will happen that we don't quite agree with. As I pointed out previously, this lockdown period has enabled people, particularly Christians, to perhaps be a bit more pick and choosy about where they go to church online, to shop around a little bit more, to find a church which perhaps suits them. It could be in another part of the country, because you can just click on a button and you're there watching and you're in person there. I was talking this week to someone about their dad. And their dad worshipped in a local Anglican church up until lockdown. And then during lockdown, you'll go in the little room next and play with the children. Steve will take you through. There's more. There's more. Welcome. Hi. Come on in. Come on in. There's children in the lounge if they'll go and play. That's absolutely fine. Nice to have you with us. Catherine's in there looking after them. They're playing. So. And so this person I was talking to, their dad used to worship at the local Anglican church. And then during lockdown, they joined the church that their daughter was at, this person I was talking to. And because they were a student in another part of the country. And so they would join that church and join their daughter in worshipping in that particular church. Now that's kind of with the other side of that lockdown, it's like a real challenge for that person to try and reconcile what they have experienced pretty much all the way through the lockdown and what they were worshipping, where they are now worshipping, and trying to reconcile that disconnect a little bit perhaps from what they have experienced and what they perhaps found they liked in where they were previously online to where they have been worshipping for many years. And that's not a unique story. I've heard it many times, and I've heard it when I've talked to other pastors and other ministers, people in their churches that have struggled with that very same sense of, yeah, the church that I'm now part of, I've been part of all my life, is not what it used to be, and I've quite enjoyed the idea of being able to jump in online to somewhere else. As we embark on this particular series, I Love My Church, we're going to do so from the perspective of this particular church here. I'm not in a comparison game. I'm not going to compare myself and Barnwell to anywhere else. I simply want Barnwell Baptist Church to be the best church that we can be. That's my overarching aim, is that we can be the best we can be, not for my glory, not for my credit, but for the glory of God, that people will hear and understand and see what we believe. For those of you who've been with us for a few weeks, you'll recall that we've been encouraging each other to take time to pray and reflect on lockdown and what it has meant for us, what we've missed, what we haven't missed, what are the takeaway lessons from that this last 18 months. The reason for that is important that we understand, before we jump into everything, what God is saying to us. We take that time to have a little bit of a pause and to reflect on what we've been learning and what God is calling us to. As I've been chatting to Catherine at the start of her ministry and talking through stuff, one of the things that's become quite apparent to me is that increasingly we think we need to understand why Barnwell Baptist Church does things in a certain particular way. You might have joined us and not understand some of that. So over these next few weeks, as we go through this particular material, one of the things we're going to be doing is looking again at some of the why of why we do certain things the way that we do. Other churches will do it different ways, and that's absolutely fine. As I said when I introduced this series a couple of weeks ago, appointing Catherine was a massive step for this church, because actually it's starting to change how we operate, how we work, how we relate. And so we need to kind of go back to that sense of what is God saying to us. So as we come to this series and as we come to this particular theme, that's the backstory. I'm not going to say that every Sunday, but that's the backstory every week for the next few weeks. We need to recognise that church should be a place where we learn. Luke records, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. Church, Barnwell Baptist Church, should be a place where we learn. But what does that actually mean? What does it actually look like? This group that is, we're talking about here, that Luke's recording here, were a group of new Christians. Many of them had only just literally come to faith. They had come from different walks of life, different cultures, different experiences. They had made a decision to commit themselves to learning and understanding what being a follower and disciple of Jesus meant. But they didn't. Were working it through. They were having to work it out as they went. I want to look at three things with you. The first is what the apostles taught, how they were taught, and then thirdly, what the people did with that teaching. So what did they teach? When we come to the Bible, it's always good for us to pause and to think about the words and what they meant when they were first written and how the first readers of this particular material understood these words. So we read the apostles' teaching and what they devote themselves to. Sometimes we miss the impact of that. So let's jump back a few verses in Luke's account anyway, one chapter or a couple of chapters to Luke 24. This is the end of his first part of his story, the end of his gospel. And in verse 18 of Luke chapter 24, we pick up the story here, and this is post-resurrection. Some of his disciples of Jesus, they've seen the empty tomb, they're kind of a bit disheartened, don't quite understand what's going on, and they're walking home. And one of them, named Cleopas, asked this man who turned up, who we know is Jesus, "Are you the only one who's visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" What things, he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," he replied, "he was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." The first century falls in a period of what is known as the oral tradition, where stories, information, truth, history was passed on by word of mouth. Now, we immediately step back in our culture from that and go, "Oh, that's a bit dodgy, isn't it? Because, you know, Chinese whispers and things can get misrepresented." But in reality, in that context, because it was part of their tradition, they were very careful about what they passed on. And the skills that were required for them to learn and to pass that message, those messages on from generation to generation, were embedded into their culture. We've lost that today. And so therefore, when people say things and words of our mouths don't have the same impact as what they did back in the first century. I don't know if any of you know what this is here. Any of you know what this is? Some of you will. So this is a Bible that's been written out by hand, and it was something that Sue did when she was alive many years ago. And she wrote it out, literally, word by word. And this is the whole of the Bible. It's something she did for herself. It was what she felt she wanted to do. It's part of her story, her journey. And so we have this. This is Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther and Job. They've got literally the whole of the Bible there. And when she did it, if she made a mistake, she'd throw the page out and just start again. Now, I haven't gone through it word by word to compare it and to check that it is accurate word by word. But I'm pretty sure it's pretty close. And when the scriptures were written and transcribed, when things started to be written down, and scribes would write out the Bible or write out the parchments, if they made a mistake, they'd just burn the whole thing. That was what they were meant to do. Obviously, they didn't quite do that all the time because we have slightly different parchments that have been discovered over the years. But they were very careful about translating, about transcribing and making sure it was accurate. They were sure that they wanted to make it 100% accurate. And the same is true when things were passed on orally. Now, we know that teachers and people in positions of authority can abuse that. And we know from our own church history that that is the case. That people can stand at the front and say what they want to say. And without that sense of being able to challenge them, people can get away with stuff. But what were the apostles teaching here? What was it that they were teaching? They weren't teaching their own agenda. What they were doing is that they were sharing the stories of Jesus, first-hand account of what they had experienced, of what Jesus had taught them. The times that they had walked with Jesus and Jesus had shared with them stuff. That's what they were teaching. They were teaching, as Luke says here, about the Old Testament, the prophets. They were helping these new believers to understand. They knew the Jewish scriptures, but understand actually what it meant for them. To understand how the prophets were telling that Jesus was the Messiah. They were putting it all together for them. These new believers devoted themselves to understanding the things of the Old Testament and the things that these disciples, those witnesses of Jesus, those first-hand accounts of Jesus, how that all made sense of life. Now we have the blessing of the full account of Scripture. And we have our Bibles. Now we have loads of different versions of it. And if you go to any app, you can see all of the different versions. We are so rich and blessed with the Bible. And we have some of those stories that were told as recorded by Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. I'm sure some of the stories that were told we haven't got written down for us because God didn't want us to have them. If we wanted us to, we'd have had them. But they're not there. We have the apostles' teaching that was written to churches as they tried to help churches to understand what this meant. We have that, which these early disciples didn't have. Now, we are blessed to have all of that. And yet we can become so complacent in having it that we don't understand it, don't appreciate it, and don't read it and dig into it. So they taught from the prophets, the Old Testament, they taught the stories of Jesus. That's what they were committed to learning and understanding. But how did they teach? Yeah, we've already mentioned this as an oral tradition, and stories and truths were communicated verbally. We also know that from looking at this Acts chapter 2 passage that they met every day in the temple courts and in their homes. What they didn't do was go to church once a week and sit through a 30-minute sermon, or a 35-minute sermon if you're unlucky. Or 20 minutes later, if you're very lucky. That wasn't what they did. But that's what we have brought it to be. So when we start to think about what church is and how we as a church are committed to learning, we need to somehow get away from this idea that it's about sitting through a sermon once a week on a Sunday. Because that's not biblical. Sorry, I can't find it in the Bible anyway. Now, it's part of our tradition, it's part of what we have embraced, and it's part of our story. But there is so much more for us to learn about what it means to be a place, a church that is committed to learning and encouraging people to learn. Now, universities have clocked it. Stephen will articulate this for us. Last week, Corbin and I did a couple of university open days. And we went to one of the universities, and our guide, one of the students, second-year student, showed us this nice brand new lecture theatre. And she said, this is brand new, built during lockdown, doesn't get used because everything's now online. But she said, actually for me, it's been really helpful because I struggle to sit through, because I've got a condition. She said, I struggle to sit through a 40-minute lecture and take and concentrate. Because it's recorded, I can go back and watch it and catch up and make sure I've got it all. Now, there are people like that in our churches who cannot sit through a 40-minute sermon or a 30-minute sermon or even a 20-minute sermon because that's not their style and they have conditions that cause that not to happen. But if you go to university, you have the seminars where you get small groups of people that talk about what they've been learning and what the professors have been teaching them. You get the practical stuff where you get into the workshops or you get into the labs and you get out there in the field and you put it into practice and you learn what you've been doing. You have a range of experiences, a range of ways to learn. And universities that are good provide all of that. Why is it that as churches, we just lump it into a 30-minute sermon on a Sunday and think we've done it? And we think that's how it is, that's how we learn. That's not how we learn. We need the range of experiences. We need that range of breadth of experience. We need church to be a place where people from all backgrounds and all experiences can learn. As we look ahead, I've already flagged up with my leaders and the leaders of the church here that we need to be thinking about how we become inclusive and diverse in how we embrace this. If someone comes in who's blind, how do they engage with what we do? How do we help those who are hard of hearing, those with physical disabilities, those who have health issues that mean they can't sit through a sermon on a Sunday and engage perhaps as easily with what happens here? How do we make church inclusive? Responding to the situation and the needs that we have around us. You know, we need our Sunday services. You may not know, but every Sunday sermon is recorded. So if you do miss it, and you are the person that sort of struggles to listen to 30 minutes of me, you can go back and listen to more of me. That's probably worse, isn't it? But you can do that. You can go back if you kind of switched off at some point and go, what happened there? They're all online. You can all go back and listen to them. We have our small groups in the week where it's an opportunity to dig a bit deeper, to discuss what we've been hearing, to think about what we've been hearing together, to hear from one another. Not to hear more of the same, but to chew it over. We encourage people to find small accountability groups, two or three people that will help you to really go deeper. And we'll come back to that periodically over the next few weeks. You know, I'm very comfortable with the fact that Barnwell Baptist Church isn't going to be the church of choice for every person. I'm very comfortable with that. The style and what we do is not going to be suited to everybody. And I'm very happy for people to come and to find us not to be that and find what is suitable for them. I have no issue with that. But I do want to be us to be a church that is committed to providing opportunity for people to learn and to grow. The question is, what do the people do with that teaching? Because the challenge for us is, whilst it's okay for us to perhaps put everything together and do all the stuff and put all the groups on, it's not about growing knowledge. There are churches you can go to and you can come away and your head's spinning because of what you've heard. But trying to put it into practice is a bit of a nightmare because you haven't got a clue how to actually live it out day on day. Yes, we need to be able to give the material, give the input, give that feed to people spiritually. But we also need to help people to then live that out. One of the things I loved about Moorlands College was the course that I did was an applied theology course. They deliberately called it that because they said it's not about learning about God, it's about learning how to apply that knowledge in the day-to-day, in ministry. And the whole course was then built around the practical outworking of what we've been hearing. So you don't just sit through Greek lectures and hermeneutics lectures and that's it. You have to then think about how that applies, what you do with that. We need to have relationships where we can go deeper. We need to find people that will help us to go deeper in our faith, to work it out, to live it out. People that will help and challenge us to not be those who just absorb knowledge, but actually put it into practice. I was talking to a friend, a minister this week, and we were talking about church unity and Christian unity across the churches. And one of the things we talked about was the fact that, and I think this is probably true, it's impossible to have unity without humility. We can know it all, but actually we've got to be recognised that sometimes we don't know it all. And sometimes what we think we know isn't actually what it is at all. We need to allow space for others to have a different opinion to ourselves. Unity isn't about all thinking the same. It's about being honouring one another in the things that we disagree over. And that's a challenge. It's a real hard struggle sometimes when we don't see eye to eye with people to live in unity with us. But God says to us in the Bible, it's important that as Christians we live in unity with each other. We need relationships to help us to figure that out. We need church that helps us to figure that out. Yes, a place to learn and to gain knowledge, but a place where we can grapple with these things and actually start to live it out. That we don't just become a place where we come to absorb, but we come to understand what this means for me tomorrow. How do I live this stuff out? What does it mean for us to be a church that learns, that's a place where we can grow? What does it look like? We want to be a place where people do understand the Christian faith. We will do Alpha. We will continue to teach. But we also need to be that place where people can grapple with that stuff, try and work it out for them personally. A place where they can find those common relationships, where they can dig deep and help one another. And we have those groups in the church. We encourage people to find two or three other people where they can walk deeper and closer with one another, to encourage each other as we seek to be lifelong disciples of Jesus. I want, as we conclude, just to take you to Psalm 19. This is the version of the Message. We've got the blessing of that. So I'm going to read this from Psalm 19 from the Message version. Now, as we do that, think about this book here. This is what we're talking about here, okay? How do you view this? How do you see this? How do you understand this? Is this just a textbook? Listen to how the psalmist describes it. The revelation of God is whole and pulls our lives together. The signposts of God are clear and point out the right road. The life maps of God are right, showing the way to joy. The directions of God are plain and easy on the eyes. God's reputation is 24 karat gold with a lifetime guarantee. The decisions of God are accurate down to the nth degree. God's word is better than a diamond. Better than a diamond set between emeralds. You'll like it better than strawberries in spring. Better than red, ripe strawberries. Is that how you see God's word? Is that how you see the Bible? That you like it better than strawberries in spring? That it's more precious than a diamond set amongst emeralds? Does that sound like a textbook that you read and then put aside? Or does that sound like something you actually want to get into and understand a bit more? You know, as a church, we want to be a church. Bible Baptist wants to be a church where we can come to learn. We come to grow. As far as I can tell, you're all still breathing. I think. I hope in that's the case. We want to be a place where we are committed to being lifelong disciples of Jesus. That means we don't ever get to a point where we think we know it all, we've got it sorted, no one can teach us anything, because we still need to live it out. We need to have the humility to recognize we can still be taught, we can still learn. And actually other people's opinions actually challenge us about what we think. We need that community. We need people across that breadth of community that will help us and challenge us and help us to live it out day on day. We don't want to be a place where you just come once a week and sit and just listen. Across the breadth of the life of the church, we want to be a place where you can come and engage and discuss and grow. And if we need to tweak what we do on a Sunday to make it more inclusive, then we need to be thinking about that. if we need to think about how we do these things, then let's embrace that. The challenge for many churches now is, do we keep doing the online stuff or not? And I've had this conversation with people in the church here. There's a real challenge about people who struggle to come physically to the building, who could access something if it was online. But is that the right thing to do or not? That adds another layer to what we do. Changes the dynamic of what we do perhaps a little bit. Makes it harder to do live worship because it's harder to stream that online. But what does it look like for us to be a church which opens ourselves up and allows others to engage and to become part of it? I'm not saying we should do that. I'm just saying these are the challenges, these are the questions that we've got to wrestle with, and which many church leaders are having to wrestle with at this time. And there's a conversation that we have, I'm having every time I meet a different pastor or leader, is trying to figure out what they're doing and how they're responding to those particular challenges. We want to be a church where we grow, where we learn, that isn't just focused on the Sunday morning service. As important as it is, I don't want you to think it's not important to come to church on Sunday, because it is important. But it's not the be-all and end-all. It's not the only place where we learn and grow. I want to encourage us that we commit ourselves, devote ourselves as these apostles did, to being people that want to learn, that want to grow, that want to understand, that want to challenge one another. And we do that in different ways, in different places and times. That's right for us. My heart is that Barnwell Baptist Church is a place where people come and they become lifelong disciples of Jesus. People that live for Jesus every day, working it out day on day on day on day until God calls them home. For me, Paul says to live is Christ and to die is gain. And whilst I have breath in my body, I want to live for Christ. I hope and pray that's the same for all of us. And if it's not, it could be. Because it's the best way to live your life. Let's pray.